Mr. Watson, Real 3. We were talking about your time when you were working for the Belgian Bank in London, living in Grove Park. What were the raids like, far as you remember?
I was going to add, because we lived in Grove Park at the top of the hill, and our house was on the elevated side of the road, we used to look right across London to St. Paul's. And of course, we used to look out of the windows, which I suppose in retrospect was a silly thing to do, but we used to look out of the windows across the whole of London and see the raids taking place and see the results of the bombs being dropped. And I can always recall on one occasion seeing one of the parachute mines coming down. I thought at the time it was some Germans coming out by parachute, but when the thing landed and there was this enormous flash, I knew then that it certainly wasn't a German. Of course, I used to cycle to and fro the bank.
You didn't use public transport?
No, I never used public transport because I used to enjoy cycling, and we used to keep the bike in the basement with the mice and the waste paper. Several of us used to cycle to the bank. I used to cycle, and of course, cycling up there, I invariably used to cycle up along where the Surrey docks were. Now, the Surrey docks were timber docks, and they were in the big bend of the Thames, and all along the river, of course, was the target for the Germans. And we used to see a lot of the results of the bombing. We used to go up past the Surrey docks, up through Bermondsey, and invariably we used to go over Tower Bridge, not London Bridge, and cycle down the Minories to the bank. And we used to see a lot of the results of the bombing, a lot of the results.
I mean, did you have problems with the roads being blocked and glass on the roads?
On many occasions when there were craters in the road, or gas mains fractured or water mains fractured. I mean, you see water sometimes fill the holes up. You used to see a lot of the results of the bombing. Of course, I didn't join the army until 1942, so I was in London right through all the worst of the bombing. And obviously we never used to go around looking for it, but buildings were still on fire some two or three days after they came to light. I mean, some of the larger fires. There was this smell of smoke and dust everywhere. It's the sort of smell which I can remember, and I never encountered it again in the army, going through Germany or anywhere else. It was a very distinguishable smell. Whether it was the result of water on fires or dust or charcoal or dirt, I don't know, but it was a very, very unique smell. We used to see all of this. We used to see the firemen at work. We used to see the people doing the constructing, because after the fire of December 1940, the authorities suddenly realised that what they must have was immediate and ready supplies of large quantities of water. They couldn't rely on water mains, because if the water mains were broken, there would be no pressure. So what they had to do was construct concrete emergency water tanks everywhere. Now, along the Thames, of course, they used to have large steel pipes going straight down into the Thames and along the bridges with cocks on them for the farm to connect to. But away from the Thames and away from large lakes or ponds, they used to construct these emergency water tanks, which used to hold anything up to 100,000 gallons. for use by the farmer. And of course, we used to see all these being constructed. These were once again constructed by the Ministry of Works Mobile Labour Force. And they made a damn good job of them, because when I got in the building trade, we had the unenviable task of breaking one up. And I think it took a purpose-made excavator some 3 weeks to break it up. That's the way it's gone, of course. But we saw all this sort of thing going on. And of course, being young, you were interested in everything like that. You were interested in the firemen. The policemen always cleared you out of the way, of course, you're watching. Obviously, they didn't want spectators, they had work to do. We didn't see, I never saw anybody killed at all during the air raids. We used to hear about it, there was an air raid shelter at Lewisham, where the walls blew out and the people inside all became killed, 50 or 60 killed. But I never saw any casualties at all as a result of the bombing, not one.
Now, what about things like the Home Guard? Did you ever think of joining, or did you join?
No. I wasn't in the Home Guard at all. I was waiting for call-up, obviously. But I don't really know that there was a Home Guard around here at Chillinghurst, where I now am, because they still called a field at the back of me the Soldiers' Field. I think the Home Guard weren't so much in evidence in the inner London area as they were in the outer districts and in the country. I think the fear was that the Germans wouldn't land in the middle of London. The Home Guard seemed to be more evident. My grandfather had moved down to Kingstown, which is along the A20, and when I used to go and visit him, and we had to go past the security check at Swanley, and we had to present our identity cards and say why we were going there and the rest of it. I think the Home Guard were more in evidence in the outer areas, in the country areas, probably in Kent and Sussex more than they were in the inner London area. I never saw any evidence of the Home Guard. But as I say, they definitely used to train up here at the back of me. And in fact, when I built this house, we found 0.3 ammunition in the garden. So obviously, and it was live ammunition, the Home Guard had done some training here.
Now, did you have any sort of military training or voluntary activity before?
No, none at all. No, nothing at all. So apart from the fact that I had an idea of joining the Merchant Navy, and I went to, there used to be a school at Clapham, that taught you all about radio telegraphy, as they call it. And that's where I got to my top speed in the Morse code. And I learned it, all the theory and the rest of it, but I just couldn't get into the Merchant Navy. Radio operators were oversubscribed. And that you can't imagine now, can you? But that is the case. Radio operators, there was absolutely no hope at all of me becoming a radio operator. I don't know whether it was because they thought I was too young or what it was, but I had no... I've forgotten the name of that school now, but I know it was in Clapham, and I used to go there quite regularly. I used to have to pay to go there, but I did have regular lessons in transmission, Morse code, reception, and... small commercial transmitters.
Now, why did you want to join the Merchant Navy rather than anything else? Because everyone has radio operators.
Well, we're interested in radios in those times. I did not think of any other branch of the services that had the sort of transmitters in which I was interested. Obviously, tanks, aircraft and the rest of it had transmitters, but none of them were of the scope or size that a ship had. I was interested in a proper transmitter, not a toy.
Now, how were you feeling about it? I mean, as you went through 40, 41, 42, you're getting closer and closer to when you...
Well, that's it. I just shrugged my shoulders and that was it. I had to go, didn't I?
You didn't worry about it?
Well, I didn't want to go. Well, I mean, I grew up in a close family. I wasn't extrovert at all. And I went with some trepidation. But directly I got there...
Now, hang on. What exactly was the call-up procedure then? How did they go about taking you into the army? Did you have a medical first?
Oh, yeah, you have a medical. You also have the tests, what they call them, the psychology tests that they give you.
Do you remember anything about them?
Well, I can remember looking at a lot of puzzles and thinking, well, these are dead easy. And doing them all, and I suppose they came to the conclusion that I had mechanical aptitude. I don't know. I told them obviously that I was interested in radios, and I knew the Morse code. I couldn't drive. I also told them that. I gave them all the information. They knew, I suppose, I had 7 O levels. They also knew I was good at shorthand typewriting and bookkeeping. But I suppose they could. So when we've got plenty of clerks, we don't want any more clerks. I can remember the test. Yeah.
Now, what was the call-up then? When did you get it?
It's
April 42, isn't it?
I've got my paybook here, sir. I joined. I know where I joined. I know I joined at Cove.
Well, that'll do then. What happened when you got to Cove? That's near Farnborough, isn't it?
There we are. Is that right? 2442?
That sounds right. 2nd of April, 1942.
2442.
What happened
when... When I got to Cove, we were obviously a mixed group of people, all in civilian clothes. And I will also remember... But at that time, they must have been calling up two age groups. In other words, young men like myself, and also older people in the region of 30 to 35. So we weren't a group of youngsters. We had a mixed group of people there. Some of them obviously had wives and children. Some of them were young like myself.
Now, what unit were you joining? I know you're not quite sure, but what was it you were joining?
Well, I was joining the Royal Armoured Corps.
And which part of it?
Well, the one that I was joining there, as I say, I was first issued with a Royal Tank Regiment badge on my belly.
And you think it was the second?
And I'm pretty certain it wasn't the third, because the third was in the 29th. It was either the 2nd or the 4th Battalion of the Royal Tank Regiment.
And it was a depot?
Oh, yeah. We were sleeping on the floor in married quarters. That depot.
And how did they take you in? You know, you arrive. How did they kit you out, cut your hair, that sort of thing?
I'd always had short hair anyway, but it was the usual thing that you've seen in films many times. They weren't particularly belligerent. I'd expected things to be a lot worse than they were. I found them very reasonable people there, but being the tank regiment, perhaps the tank regiment had different attitudes to the guards or other infantry regiment. I found that most of the instructors there were more intelligent than I anticipated, and they saw the other person's point of view. We had one or two instructors who'd been out in North Africa and were obviously knew about some death and the rest of it, and knew that tanks weren't the end of the earth. But I can always remember one sergeant there saying to us, "You bloody well think yourselves nothing. Much better to go into action with a quarter of an inch of armour plate in you instead of a battle dress in front of you, instead of a battle dress, which I thought was a very pertinent remark, and obviously bore fruit later on when you saw the infantry scattered about everywhere. But on the whole, they were a good group of people there, and I must say that I thoroughly enjoyed that period of my life.
I'm going to look at it in detail now. What about your kit issue of kit? Do you remember that?
They issued a kit, and it fitted reasonably well. Obviously, the gas on the battle dress, because they used to gas it, didn't they, to save the vermin that had been rife in the First World War, that irritated me a bit to start with. The coarseness of some of the underwear also irritated me. I didn't worry about not having pyjamas to sleep in at night. That never worried me. We were sleeping on, we had on biscuits on the floors. There were four through a room of these married quarters, and we were sleeping in the biscuits. You know what the biscuits are, don't you?
Can you just describe them?
Well, the biscuits, I take it, are roughly about 2'3" square padded pads of about 3 inches height. There were three to a set. You lay them out obviously in line at night when you were sleeping.
Just on the floor?
On the floor. If you were restless, they spread about and you sit down in the middle of them. And if you slept well, they stay together. During the day, of course, you had to pack them up so that they were one on top of the other, and your kit was put on top of the biscuits.
Now, can we look at a typical day and sort of pick up as many things as you can? What time would the day start for you?
Well, I think that we used to start at about, the value was at about 6 o'clock, and that gave you time to get washed and shaved. And then you probably had breakfast at about 7.
Now, that brings us on to army food. Let's have a look at that then. The food was
not bad at that depot. The food wasn't bad at all. I would add, while I think about it, that the worst food I ever had was in the place with the best kitchens and the best equipment, namely the Royal Army Pay Corps down at Whitchurch. That had originally been the evacuation quarters of the Bank of England, and everything was built to a supreme standard. The food, nevertheless, was the worst I ever had in the whole of the army.
Now, what about at Cova? What sort of food did you get, and how did it match up to your...
I can't remember the food, but I probably had better food at Cove than I would at home, because we were on rations at home. I had better food at Cove than I did at home. In other words, we generally had bacon every morning for breakfast, which I never had at home. I don't say we had eggs every morning, but we had bacon, fried bread, plenty of tea. There was always plenty of sugar, never short of sugar, porridge. The food on the whole was good. In fact, I put weight on when I went to Cove. So obviously, it agreed with me. And the instructors were always, I said, intelligent.
Now, after breakfast, what sort of training sessions would you have? Well, perhaps PT first.
You deal with the first 6 weeks.
Yeah.
The first 6 weeks, the initial training, we obviously did drill.
Now, how did you take to drill?
I quite enjoyed the drill. It never hurt me to turn right, turn left, and form threes. That never hurt me at all. I took to that quite kindly.
You didn't mind the repetition?
I didn't mind the repetition of it. I didn't find that onerous at all.
And did you understand why you had to do so much of it then?
Yeah, because of discipline. Yeah. Oh, yeah. As I said, the instructors there were intelligent, and they didn't just tell you to do things because I say so. They told us to do things, and they gave us the reasons for so doing. They were good. There's no getting away from that. And I didn't fight boys. Some of the older people found it more onerous. Obviously, if you become set into a way of life by the time you're 30, 34, you would have, but these chaps found it a bit harder work. The older people, I can remember this chap Osborne, his name was. He was a good amateur boxer. He'd come from Croydon, but he did not take to discipline at all. Now, whether as a result of being an amateur boxer, he'd had his brain banged about a bit, but he had no relation. If he was told to turn left, or they were told to turn left 43 times, now and again he'd turn right. And he went right through everything like that. He was hopeless at kick check, hopeless at doing anything at all. Nevertheless, he got through, and the last I heard of him, he was down in Birmingham. But there were one or two like that. I can always remember one chap in particular who was a member of the Plymouth Brethren, who used to get down on his hands and knees and pray every evening in the middle of this room in which there were four of us staying. The rest of us were absolutely amazed at this chap, but I suppose he was sincere. How he got on later, I don't know. But
what about PT?
I enjoyed it. I'd always enjoyed, as I told you earlier, at school I'd enjoyed PT. I enjoyed the pole vaulting and the rope climbing and the rest of it. Yes, I enjoyed that too.
And did you feel it actually made you fitter, or was it...
It did, mate. No, I didn't feel it made me fitter. I knew it made me fitter. I knew it made me fitter.
Were you doing route marches?
Well, we did route marches, but don't forget this is the armoured corps, and compared with the infantry, these route marches were probably, we weren't asked to carry too much weight, and these route marches weren't of an enormous length. I think the longest we ever did was 12 miles. There were one or two blisters, but once again, we had a good instructor. I didn't drink at the time, but we weren't in a bad part of the world down there. The weather was gorgeous that summer. And this chap, his sergeant that arranged the route march, was stopped at a pub, which I thought was very good for those that drank. But I didn't drink at the time, funnily enough. A lot of them were very pleased that he stopped the route march and went into the pub.
What about weapons training? Because this is your very basic training. You were actually trained as infantrymen. Before you started. Did you get much rifle or bayonet?
We didn't have. To my recollection, we never had bayonet training at all.
What about the rifle?
Don't forget that this was a tank regiment. We never had. We had rifle training. We had shooting at targets.
What do you remember of rifle training? How serious was it?
Well, it wasn't that serious, the rifle training. Are we still dealing with the first 6 weeks, or are we further?
Are we still dealing with the first six weeks?
No, we only had a cursory rifle training, because I think most of that 6 weeks was devoted to marching, coordination of instructions, which of course are very important, and learning to do things quickly without questioning them and doing them very, very quickly, immediately. And that was drilled into us above all. We did a certain amount of arms drill, present arms and weapons with rifles. I can't remember a lot about firing rifles. That came later on, but I don't think that happened a lot in the basic training.
What about preparing for kit inspections?
Sort of thing, yeah.
You take to that?
I was a bit ham-fisted at some of it. I didn't take very, very kindly to it, but I learned. I had to learn. I used to get my toothbrush the wrong way round, or my razor the wrong way round, or things like that, but I learned about it.
Would somebody help you? Things like doing your webbing, doing your boots. Would people give you advice or?
No. There were people there who'd been in the territorials, who knew a thing or two, and they would there was a good spirit among the recruits there that we would help one another. We used to help this chap Osborne. We used to, all used to help him with his kit because he was always so far behind. But generally there was a good spirit among them. But there were one or two people there who knew the ropes and they'd help you, and you could always go around it. I mean, the instructors, once again, were not martinets. They were pleasant people.
What about the, your fellow recruits? Were they there were two different age ranges. Mm. What sort of background were they from compared to
yourself? I can always remember one chap there because he used to be drunk every morning, and I wondered how. His father was a director of the Bank of England, so he was obviously well-heeled, and all he used to do every night was go to the pub and drink Irish whiskey, and that used to have the effect in the morning. He used to wake up and look at you, and what did you say, what was that? And he really was still intoxicated the following morning. Of course, the rest of us gathered what was happening. There was a good variety of people there, and some came from the same sort of background as myself, from a large family. Some had a much more sheltered life than I had. It was a good cross section.
And you got on well together?
I got on very well together.
No bullying at all?
Oh, never saw any bullying. I never saw any bullying. The whole of the time I was in the army, I never saw any bullying.
Did you see much of the officers during this? You've mentioned the...
Not very little, no. Most of the instructing was left to sergeants. The officers used to interview us and speak to us and ask us questions or compliment us, but we didn't see a lot of the officers.
And any other training during this first phase, or was that it?
Nothing that really stands out in the mind. I got on quite well with all of it. None of it worried me, and as I say, it opened my eyes speaking to other people from different walks of life. I mean, you get people who've been to university and people like that, and some of the older people who've had experience of life. I mean, there was one or two people who'd lost children, been seriously ill, things like that. You realise then that life's not all easy going.
And did you get out at all into the local?
Being on I forget what the amount of money paid at that time was, but it wasn't enough for me to go out. I never drank, as I've already told you, not at that time. That came later on. That's another story I've got to tell you. But I never drank at that time. We used to go to the Nappy. There was a Nappy there. We used to go down into Farnborough. Because don't forget that Farnborough at that time, we were right on the edge of the Royal Air Force investigation people, the research establishment, which is now called where they hold the Farnborough Air Show every year. We were right on the edge of that ground. When we did our weapons dismantling, and engine dismantling, our actual workshops overlooked the runway from which these planes flew. So when we used to go down into Farnborough, there were more Air Force people there than there were RAC people.
What would you do in Farnborough?
Well, I would just go to the cinema now and again. I used to get home once or twice there, because it's only a short train ride up to London, another short train ride down to go home and see my parents. But I don't think I came home a lot from there.